Hello and welcome back to the Law Careers Net podcast, sponsored by the University of Law. You're listening to one of our interview episodes in which we speak to people in and around the world of law. In this episode, Niamh speaks to Bumi Jempfa about imposter syndrome, Sheehan lawsuits, career pivots, and the importance of finding your why when pursuing a legal career. It's a really interesting chat covering much of Bumi's career and passion, and there's lots of useful advice and inspiration for you to take away. So without further ado, here is that conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Law Careers Net podcast. My name is Niamh Gray and today I am speaking to Bumi Jempfa. Bumi has a series of accomplishments. She founded the Fashion Law Edit in 2016 to raise awareness of fashion law issues to practitioners in the legal and fashion industries, and is also part of several mentoring groups across a number of age groups, starting from secondary school all the way up to second year law students at the University of Westminster. Bumi also most recently won the Unsung Hero Award at the Women and Diversity in Law Awards in 2023. So, Bumi, you are clearly a multi-talented and incredibly accomplished person. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, please?
Certainly. And thank you so much, Niamh, for that introduction. It just was like, wow, I've done a lot, you know. But yeah, so I'm an award-winning legal professional working in law firm risk and compliance. Previously, before that, I was actually studying to become a barrister whilst, you know, working at a law chambers, but decided to pivot into law firm and risk and compliance in 2021. I'm also the founder of the Fashion Law Edit, and I also am the DEI representative for the London Young Lawyers Group.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Could you outline your area of expertise for us and how you kind of came to do the work that you now do?
Sure. So like I explained before, you know, I initially wanted to become a family law barrister. And I know it sounds really cliche, but I always wanted to have a legal career from quite an early age. And then it wasn't until during year 10 when, you know, I did my work experience at two separate chambers, one in, I think, a criminal set and a family set. And I decided, yeah, okay, family law is what I'm going to do. So from then on, it was just, you know, that traditional route of doing my A-levels. I did English Lit, RE, Government and Politics, and History. Then went on to do my law degree, graduated in 2017, and then took a gap year before, you know, going back and doing my bar course part-time whilst working at Barrister Chambers, Garden Court Chambers. So up until that point, the career trajectory was really very much, you know, family law orientated, and that was my thing. And then actually during my university days, so during my second year university, I came across, you know, fashion law, which, you know, I know we'll go more into that. So I was also, again, doing family law stuff, but had an interest in fashion law. And then it wasn't until like 2021, coming out of the pandemic, I think everyone had that, you know, realization of actually, what do I want to do in life? Just realigning goals and aspirations. And it kind of was a thing for me, like I never gave myself that opportunity to fully explore what else was there in the legal profession. Not because, you know, I was forced into, you know, practicing law or anything. I think just at the time of when I was coming up, the only two options was, you know, you either practice as a solicitor or a barrister, and that was it. So it wasn't until someone at my barrister's chambers and one of the barristers said, you know, have you looked into risk and compliance? I said, oh no, never heard of it. And they said, you know, it would make a lot more sense in terms of if you were looking to go a different direction in the legal professional, you can take all your transferable skills and put it into that. So bit of research, lots of nagging on LinkedIn, lots of other people who were in law firm risk and compliance scene. And then I got my first role as a risk paralegal at an international offshore law firm, stayed there, went on to a Magic Circle law firm as a conflicts analyst, and will be starting in the next 2 weeks as a risk analyst at an American firm. So I've had a varied legal career. So my expertise goes from, you know, family law to fashion law, law firm risk and compliance. So I actually have no like set expertise. It's really a bit of everywhere.
I think your career is clearly such an excellent testament to, just because you have a passion and an interest in law, it doesn't have to be solicitor or barrister. I mean, you've tried so many things, you are following your passion, you had that opportunity to reassess, and now you're doing something that wasn't maybe what you intended to do when you started out your career, but is such a great option. And I think for our listeners, that's going to be really useful to say, you know, there is no one size fits all or one clear trajectory follow your passions, keep on trying new things, and you could find the perfect fit that you never envisioned originally. Okay, so my next question is, what attracted you to fashion law specifically?
So fashion law. So I, alongside law and wanting to create, you know, my own career in law, and, you know, that was what I wanted to do, I also, on the side, amongst other things, had a real interest for fashion. I loved going to like fashion shows. I had like the fashion magazines passed on from my mum onto me. So I had kind of like fashion around me, but I didn't have any of that typical traditional fashion experience. So I wasn't enrolled in a fashion law course. I wasn't going to like London Fashion Week or anything like that. So what I used to do was attend fashion events, networking events, so that at least I'm in the scene of fashion. So you could catch me at the Pure London Fashion Show, for example, where they would have lots of stalls, traders, even talks as well. And it wasn't until I actually went to a fashion networking panel event, and it was a panel of, you know, at the time, you know, up and coming talent. So whether that was like stylists, fashion designers, and they were talking about their career trajectory as well. And in fact, funnily enough, so Stormzy's stylist, Melissa, was actually on the panel of this event, and she was just starting out as like a fashion stylist. And actually prior to that, she had studied criminology. So again, she didn't even have a fashion education background at that point in time. So it's really on that point, so inspiring to see, you know, where she's starting and where she's come, you know, into. So it was during that fashion networking event, I started networking, speaking with the hosts, and they were like, you know, why don't you look into fashion law? I said, okay. I went back home, did a whole bunch of research, and found out it actually is a legal niche area. I had never heard of it in my life, but found out, you know, it's very much big in America, very much blooming. They've got like the Fashion Law Institute there. They've got fashion law courses as part of like their fashion degrees. They've got law firms dedicated to fashion law solely, or like fashion law departments within their law firm. It's very much, you know, booming over there. And I realized when I was doing my search at that time, so that would be 2016 time, there wasn't really a lot of UK resources out there that I could, you know, really sink my teeth into, especially because in terms of jurisdictions, American jurisdictions and the UK jurisdictions are just two different things. So as much as I was finding US related resources, I couldn't necessarily go too much deep into it because we don't have that same legal system. And that's kind of just how I got into fashion law, reading a lot of publications. So you had the fashion law website platform, and they would usually blog anything to do with fashion law. Business of Fashion, for example, was a great resource. And that's kind of just how I fell into it.
And now a short message from our podcast sponsor, the University of Law. The University of Law offers a range of undergraduate and postgraduate legal training and master's degrees designed by qualified experts to help students advance at any stage of their career. Their courses are employment focused, honing key skills in a teaching environment based on real legal practice. Part-time and online study options are also available on many courses to help students work and study at the same time. Find out more about studying at the University of Law with the link in the podcast description.
Thank you. I think, you know, the moral of that tale is clearly go and network, because you never know what you're going to find out for the move that you want to make in your career. We always stress to our students, like, make sure you are out there networking, talking to people. It's through conversations that you're going to find what you're really, really interested in. Okay, final question on the little about you section of this podcast is, can you tell me a bit more about the fashion law edit, please?
Definitely. So again, just piggybacking off what I said, you know, in terms of I couldn't really find a whole bunch of UK related resources or publications out there, it kind of proved to me that there was a gap in the market. So I just decided, okay, I was going to do my own blog on fashion law. So I came up with the logo, website on Squarespace. Bearing in mind, I have like a legal background, so I'm not a tech whiz at all or a graphic designer. So it really was like trial and error at that time. So just came up with a name, came up with the logo, came up with the website, set that all up, and just started blogging really on anything to do with fashion law. So that would be, you know, the commercialization of it, intellectual property, copyright, trademarking, environmental problems, employability problems or issues as well. So pretty much anything that fell under that umbrella was what I was blogging about. And then within the first couple of months of starting, it really took off to the point where I started getting people from around the world send emails saying, you know, I would love to write for your blog. So they would send articles on a voluntary basis and just started writing for the blog. And that soon picked up into me entering the University of Westminster and NARQ's Big Ideas competition, where I pitched my blog to potential investors at the time. And I actually was a runner-up winner of the competition and won £500. So I put that back into, you know, the hosting of the Squarespace site. I was then, you know, a finalist in the UK Blog Awards 2017. And then I held my first event in collaboration with another law firm all about sustainability within the fashion industry. And I held that at Condé Nast College of Fashion. And that was literally attended by just about everyone. So it didn't really matter if you were a law student, legal professional, a fashion student, business student. It was really the merging of everybody who was interested in the fashion industry and really discussing with the wonderful panel about, you know, how can we as consumers, as legal professionals, business professionals, fashion professionals really combat the issues of sustainability within the fashion industry, especially because if you want to see change, you've really got to target that from a political and legislation point of view as well. So off the back of that successful event, fast forward to 2021, I held my second event and it was a webinar called Women in Fashion Law in conjunction with International Women's Day in March 2021. And that was a panel event again, featuring five UK and US lawyers, just talking about how they got into fashion law, their career trajectory, especially for those within the UK. I thought it was really important to hear from those within that sector, just how they managed to navigate it again, because how the US approach this area, it's very different to how us in the UK approach it. So again, that was really inspiring. And then my most recent event was held in 2022, which was an in-person event since we no longer had lockdown rules. And that was very different in terms of it was more on, you know, influencers and content creators, how to, you know, best educate them when it comes to the law side of things, you know, what to look out for in a contract, understanding contractual terms, negotiating, approaching big brands, integrity as well, morals, ethics. And that had a panel of lawyers as well, industry leaders in an informal setting, just sharing their experiences and giving tips as well. So it really has been a thing of, you know, events and just really spreading the word out there for both legal professionals and those on the creative side as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I feel like we could talk about your achievements and everything you've done in your career forever, because you have done so much. But let's move on to fashion law and kind of the work you do a little bit more specifically. What do you most enjoy about the work that you do?
I think what I've realize and what I enjoy the most is the fact that I have been able to realize that no 2 days are the same. I love the fact that I, on one day, especially with when it comes to law firm risk and compliance, so I work a lot of the times in an international law firm, so I could be doing things that are US related, Dubai related, Hong Kong related. You know, it's really taken me all over the world with the type of work that I'm doing. And that's just made the role and job in itself a lot more interesting. But as well, I think I really enjoy the fact that I've been able to tie all my experiences that are going on for nearly 10 years. I've been working in the legal profession. So that should be 10 years next year. So I've been able to really use all the experiences that I've got from my very first job in the legal profession, and I've actually been able to tailor that into every role and opportunity that I've had. And it just shows, you know, that no opportunity or skills is ever wasted. You can really use that to make whatever you're working on work for you. So yeah, I just love how diverse my work is.
No, brilliant, thank you. And then on the opposite side of that, what do you least enjoy?
This might be definitely would resonate to people differently. I think the least thing is this whole thing of trying to combat imposter syndrome. I think there's always this thing of, am I good enough? Have I got what it takes? You know, this industry is so full of amazing, talented people who are all wanting more or less the same things and to really reach that high point. And sometimes it can be really daunting as you're going along and you're thinking, you know, can I really do this? Am I really worth it? Do they see what I'm about? And I know it's a constant struggle with me just trying to climb over that imposter syndrome. So I'd say the least aspect in that way would be constant trying to get over the imposter syndrome battle.
I think that's definitely relatable to a lot of people, especially in an industry like law. So thank you for your honesty in that. Can you discuss a recent fashion law case that perhaps our listeners might have seen in the news? I think you were recently used for commentary in Glossy magazine on a Xi'an case. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. So last year, I offered some commentary for Glossy magazine on the issues with Xi'an and their mounting lawsuits that we've definitely seen pretty much nearly every week. There's something about Xi'an and their lawsuit. But definitely last year, you know, we saw probably the biggest lawsuit that we've had with a fast fashion company with their RICO case, which to get a RICO case in itself means that you've really seriously done not nice things at all. So definitely on the Xi'an side of things, just tailoring that to, you know, technology. So we've seen, again, with the rise of technology, it's pretty much in every sphere and way of life that we're going, but most predominantly within the fashion industry, you know, we've got things as like wearable tech, 3D printing, and that now raises, you know, legal issues related to intellectual property, data protection and consumer rights. So in this particular Xi'an case from last year, July, three independent graphic designers launched a claim at the California federal court, just accusing Xi'an of selling exact copies of, you know, their textile and print work. But the issue with this was that allegedly all of this was being driven by an algorithm. So, you know, we don't know too much about what specific algorithm Xi'an was using, but it now kind of reawakens the issue and question of who can basically be held accountable for when algorithms are automating designs, and the extent to which, you know, designs and copyright can be protected, especially in the world of fast fashion. So in terms of the UK, so we definitely have our own statute that governs copyright in itself, and that's done by the Copyright Designs and Patents Act 1988, whereby, you know, the author of the work is basically the first owner and owns the copyright. But again, on the flip side, we don't really have an equivalent provision for those who copy designs and copy people's work. So in terms of when we're looking at AI points of view, so a lot of the engineers that power these AI models, whether it's ChatGPT or other forms of AI, so a lot of the times these engineers will feed information into the tech tool in order to train it. So, you know, we've seen that when it comes to ChatGPT and trying to figure out how we can make it work for us. So, you know, we'll come up with specific commands like, can you, for example, just off the top of my head, can you give me ideas for a blog post for this specific genre? For example, you know, it's just training that module to be able to work for us. But in that sense, we do have an issue of, like, with all the work that it's providing, who is actually owning the copyright? For example, is it these AI modules or is it us that owns it? So it's just really opens up a lot of issues in terms of who's owning the IP. Is it the AI modules? Is it the creators themselves? Is it designs? And we just don't have at this moment in time, unfortunately, a clear idea. I do know earlier on in the year, so I think back in January, there was the option to create a sort of code of practice just to be able to give clear guidance of this. And unfortunately, you know, although the UK hasn't come to an agreement on just what exactly this code of practice is, it does give a bit of encouragement that the UK is working towards solving the issue from a creative perspective, but also from a tech perspective as well.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. Something that we often do when we're looking at kind of these sorts of commercial cases at Law Careers Net is we really recommend that people use the PESEL method. So looking at all the various factors. So as you've highlighted, there are quite a few there. So strongly recommend people, you know, going away, using this example that you've been given and thinking of, you know, the political, the economic, the social, the technological, the legal, the environmental factors. That is a great way to boost your commercial awareness. Okay, let's move on to the final segment of the podcast. I want to do a little roundup. So what is the highlight of your career to date?
I think the highlight for me comes in different forms. I think for me, it's being able to pivot into different areas of the law. I started going into family law, loved it, still love it to this day, but I've then been able to pivot into risk and compliance within the law firm setting. I've also gone into fashion law as well. So I think for me, it's really pivoting into different areas and really finding success in each of those points of areas as well.
No, thank you. I think that's a really, really good point. And then my final question is, what advice do you have for people who are either interested in fashion law or becoming a legal creative more generally? You know, what should they be doing? What skills do they need? Please impart your wisdom, because I feel like you definitely have a lot of it.
I think I've got three top pieces of advice here. And I think the first one definitely would be to find out what your purpose is. What's your why for doing what you're doing? So whether that's what's your why for wanting to get into fashion law, what's your why for getting into law firm risk and compliance, or what's your why into getting into family law? I think even when at that early point, I really had my why, and I really made sure I honed in on my why. And then when I looked into what my purpose was and what my why was, it then made me then lead on to my next point, which is to be active in making my purpose happen. So being active has different ways. So that's whether doing lots of research, going for opportunities, being in the rooms of those said opportunities, networking, whether in person or virtually. So, using platforms such as LinkedIn to make networking happen for you, talking to people who are in the positions that you want to get into as well, really leaning into their expertise, their wisdom, their career trajectory as well, so that you can make that work for you, and finding out, do you want to follow their way into how they got into what they're into, or is there an alternative path for you as well? Also, I think a lot of people stumble across the thing of, when they don't find opportunities, it's kind of like, okay, what next can they do? And again, the next thing you can do is to create your own opportunities. The same way I created my own opportunity within fashion law, and I've been able to grow in that sector, I would always advise to people, if there's something that you don't see out there, create it. You don't have to have the finances necessarily, or a track record or an expertise in that, but you can cr start creating your own opportunities, which then leads on to you learning as well, but also then being able to attract yourself for future opportunities as well. I always tell people, use the power of technology. I think we're very, very fortunate that we live in a tech savvy world. So I know, for example, a lot of people are using TikTok, for example, and they're using TikTok to create videos on different subject areas. So whether that be in fashion law, employment law, all different areas of law, they're using that to create that experience for them as well. In terms of the skills section, I would say commercial awareness. We've heard all about commercial awareness. It really, really is so important. And I know it's not just about the buzzword of commercial awareness, but really making sure you're in tune of what's happening around you, how are businesses reacting to issues in the world, and what that does that mean from a legal standpoint as well. Critical thinking, negotiating, being a self-starter, thinking outside the box as well. You've got this piece of information, but how does that relate to different areas or different sectors as well? And I think the last bit of information I can say is, just have fun during the journey and process. Law doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. If that's anything, how my own path has taken me is, it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. You can find fun elements and really enjoy it as you go along. So definitely find your purpose, be active, and have fun.
Bumi, thank you so much for that. That was, absolutely fantastic advice. I think you've led such an interesting career, and I think all of your wisdom is going to be so inspirational for our students. So thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.